Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio. Listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up, Hollywood! This is your host with the most, Nikki Corulla. Eddie Pence is at a show. He just raised a bunch of money. He's doing a big hometown show on the East Coast, so we wish him lots of luck. Anyways, we're going to jump right into the interview. We are here with dancer, choreographer, manager, actress, Megan Nugent. Say hello, Megan.
Hello, everyone.
All right. All right. Our studio audience loves you already. So, we're going to jump right into this. Megan, you were a dancer in one of my music videos 6 years ago.
6 years? It's been 6 years.
Can you believe that?
Wow.
You were a badass dancer then. I can only imagine that you're just getting more crazy with all your dance moves now.
You know.
You're like, yeah, that's what I do. That's what I do. So, let's ask you this right from the top. How did you get into dance? What made you fall in love with dance?
Ooh. So the backstory with that, my mom used to actually dance. She was a professional swing dancer, her and my real dad. And she was pregnant with me whenever she was competing still.
Wow.
So she thinks she rattled me up a bit, shook me up a bit, and then spit me out, and I was doing the whole step ball change.
That's crazy. That had to be an influence, though.
It really was. And honestly, ever since I can remember, I mean, I could go all the way back to videos and pictures when I was three. And that was my first ballet class and my first tap class. And I fell in love with it. And I kept pursuing it. Although my mom was an incredible mother, is an incredible mother. Ooh, she's still alive. Thank you, Jesus.
She's like, hello.
She is an incredible mother. So she allowed me to venture in different sports and other activities. I did gymnastics, cheerleading.
Wow.
Softball, basketball.
So you're doing it all.
Horseback riding, swimming. Yeah, I did it all. And through all of it, gymnastics and dance were the two that I stuck with the most.
Is that because you fell in love with it? It just like resonated with you? Or you just felt like you had something to offer that it wasn't the same with the others?
Dance is just something to me that is such a freedom and a stress relief on top of it. And I know that people might say that all the time, but I really... Man, with all the stress that we go through and the drama that we go through in life today, I feel like somebody should have some outlet and a form of outlet that they really do depend on. It's a crutch for them.
Yeah.
That's going to always be there for them no matter what. And to me, that's what dance is. It's never left me. It's never stabbed me in the back.
Right.
It's never hurt me, although I've been injured a few times, but that wasn't it. That was me. And... So
did you fall into like a certain type of genre first? Like, was it ballet?
Jazz actually was my absolute go-to, my favorite. It was such a feeling thing. Jazz and lyrical, it was such a feeling for me and very expressive. And not that I'm not an expressive person already.
Right. And where did you grow up? Where did you grow up to get all this experience?
I was born and raised in Dallas, Texas.
Oh, wow. Southern girl.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Yes, sir.
And did you do, like, dance team or, like, anything
like that? I competed, yeah.
How old were you? What was your first competition?
Ooh, like
how old
my first competition, I had to have been maybe 12 or 13 years old. Yeah, I was asked to come on to a competitive team that they watched me at the studio that I went to and I was taking class, and they were scouting. And so I was asked to come on to the team, and then I fell in love with competition. And then, I mean, that, I think that's a big reason why I'm super competitive today.
Was your mom like a dance mom? Like,
she sure was. She sure was. She put that red lip on and that blue eyeshadow and made me sleep in curlers, which hurt so bad.
Wow. The sacrifices.
They started early. She was there every time, too. Truly, every competition, every dance class, helped making costumes. She was a trooper.
You know, that support is, it's rare. You know, it's not, you think it's like, oh, everybody has it, but it's not like that. It's, most people shy away from it. So when you have that kind of support, it's like, it only makes you stronger.
Right.
You know, as an
100%.
Artist.
100%. It's really unfortunate that not everybody gets to have that and gets to know what that feels like, really, at the end of the day, so that they're able to pass that along.
So you start with ballet, tap. Mm-hmm.
Ballet,
jazz.
Yeah.
Did you do modern?
I did do modern. Modern was, lyrical, modern, contemporary kind of was where I was learning that. And then when I went to college, when I came out here, I moved out here and I went to California Institute of the Arts.
Oh, CalArts? Great school.
Yeah.
I saw that in your bio.
I always say, sometimes I say CalArts and nobody knows what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, I know CalArts. My saxophonist went to CalArts.
Oh, nice.
Great school.
It is a great school. It was a great program. It was not a very large program. It was very small. I think my class started with 26 students and only, I believe, 9 of us graduated.
Wow.
There was 9 of us.
So was it just cutthroat? Company. Like people just like fell out of love with it? Or?
It was cutthroat. It was, I mean, the program itself was pretty intense. But, you know, if you didn't get kicked out of the program by doing whatever, and if you just didn't quit, then you stayed and toughed it out.
Did you have to do, I went to music school and we had to do juries at the end of every semester. For dance, I have no idea what it's like. Did you have to do like performances at the end of every semester where you were judged by the faculty or anything like that?
Yes.
Individual, group, was it together, was it both?
Your BFA 1 through 3, you can do whatever you like. You can do an individual, you can do a duet, you can do a group piece, and you can be in it or you don't have to be in it. Your graduating piece, though, it's a solo and it's only you.
Wow.
It's you and your work. And I happened to had an injury my graduating year, and I had a psoas injury, so I couldn't even go up staircases. I couldn't pick up my leg. Yeah, it was pretty brutal, which is why I stress so much on people's psoas whenever they say they have hip problems, not to overstretch it, because that's what makes it worse. But I had that, so I had to choose one of my graduating peers to perform my solo for me.
Wow.
And one of the girls did. Her name is Ashley Handel. She killed it. She rocked it for me. And I have no idea where she is today.
You got to find her.
New York.
You got to find her. So let me ask you this. Do you think it was because you were doing so much dance, so much gymnastics, there's just stress on the body that you were having these injuries? Or do you think a lot of it's genetics?
To be fair, I really didn't have many injuries and... I'm really thankful. Thank you, Lord. Knock on wood, too. I'm actually pretty thankful. The only serious injuries I had was a torn ligament and tendon in my big toe from college where a dancer fell on my foot.
Oh, my God.
Like, his whole body weight fell on my foot.
Oy.
Yeah, that was pretty brutal. I had to wear a boot for 6 months.
Yikes.
And then the
other one.
Yeah. Six weeks. Sorry. Six weeks.
I was about to say it. That's
ooh,
that doctor.
That's half a year.
Probably put a cast.
What doctor are you going to, Megan? So sorry. 6 weeks. And then the other one was my psoas.
So what did you do for your graduating piece? Did you do a combination of genres, or did you kind of do something totally avant-garde?
I went extremely avant-garde. I did more of an animalistic piece.
Oh, wow.
I had a friend that was in the art department and character animation, and so they helped me build this mask, so to speak. And it had feathers. I made it not demonic looking, but it was a fierce mix between a lion and a gorilla. It was really interesting.
That's cool.
I know it probably sounds crazy, but with the mask on and then this bodysuit that she wore that was painted and sponged, similar to the mask, she looked like this beautiful beast.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
How'd you come up with that concept?
Man, if you were in my head sometimes. I don't know. That's the artist.
I think the artist's depth of the imagination is going to those extremes.
Well, I was inspired by pushing my limits. Everybody else was keeping it very
safe.
It was very safe, and it's my graduating piece. It's the last hurrah that my faculty that helped, build me and make me something incredible. I had to go above and beyond and do something that was super out of my league too. My jurisdiction, my comfortability, anything that I ever grew up doing was completely against what I did.
What's cool is you also got to experience from the outside. Since you were injured, you got to watch it kind of evolve.
Yes, I did get to watch it come to life, which was really, that was really interesting. I would have made some different choices, but...
That's all right.
Yeah,
that's how it goes.
It was good.
All right, so you graduate from college, and you're like, okay, I'm going to either stay in L.A. or go to New York, because I assume that's what all dancers have to come to at some point.
Actually, that question was decided for me for college. So
you knew you were going to stay.
Mm-hmm, because I went through the New York or California situation when choosing school, and I had the opportunity. I actually got a 60% scholarship to go to Adelphi University between Long Island and Queens, and that was right after I graduated high school, and I don't really talk about this much, but I didn't really feel ready coming from this girl in Texas and Dallas and with the horses and the cowboy boots and the simple life, a very simple life, and it's not busy.
Yeah.
To just jump into this completely busy world that I knew nothing about was really scary for me. So I took a year and studied in Dallas and worked on my associates in accounting. And
what?
The next year, I know.
How did you do that? Wait. You pass over that like it's like, oh, it's nothing. But that you have to shift your brain into a completely different realm to do
Nikki,
that.
I love numbers.
I do too. I'm a musician. That's why
I love
music. Yeah, me too. I kind of love accounting, but I kind of hate it too.
Yeah.
Numbers
well,
make sense
to me.
I have
a beautiful associate. it's a backup plan too, which I don't know why.
Do you think you love numbers because of music being the background to your art?
That's a really good question.
Because I think
that's a really good question.
Because it totally makes sense. Because everything, that's why I love numbers. I play with numbers every day. Every time I'm like in a free moment, I'm constantly playing with numbers in my head.
Huh.
Like I'm always doing weird fractions or like seeing what, like time stuff, like counting.
I'm always counting.
Yeah. That's the music in you. Because, a drummer, if you have this conversation with a drummer, they're on a whole nother dimension.
Oh, yeah, I bet. Oh, 100%.
Which is crazy. You know what I mean? So I'm sure that's a big reason. So you moved to Los Angeles from Valencia? Or did you stay in Valencia and commute?
No, I moved out of Valencia. Goodness, the moment I had the chance. they call that place Awesome Town. Did you know that?
No, I did not. Well, that's what Valencians call Valencia, I'm sure.
Valencia calls it Awesome Town.
Well, there's things about it that are... Like, the poppies are amazing up there. I mean, you can see Magic Mountains there. There's some cool things.
When I was in college there, it was definitely a big bro town.
Right.
And then now it's more of a settled downtown.
Right.
People are moving up there to settle and have families, which is great.
I'm sure you got tired of Magic Mountain and poppies, though,
quick. I've only ever been to Magic Mountain, I think, twice.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
I know.
Well, it's a fun place. But I'm over it now. Now, as I get older, I'm like...
The thing is Six Flags. I went to Six Flags so much.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So it's old news to you.
It's not old news. I'm just,
You're like on to bigger and better things.
Next exciting adventure.
So let me ask you this. So you're out of school. Now the whole thing is auditions, right? It's all
at that point, yes.
Auditioning for choreographers.
Well, it was auditioning for jobs was the biggest thing, but then also trying to find an agency.
So which one came first?
Agencies first, because they'll help you get auditions for jobs.
And is it like other agencies where it's very political, or is it kind of like a networking, like who you know, or is it like all based on they're coming to studios?
I think it's a mix of all of that. Okay. I think it's definitely a mix of all of it, because a lot of agencies do appreciate walk-ins, but only by people that they, you know, come highly recommended.
Right.
And then, you know, if they go and, because they do show up at certain jobs, and if they see you and they scout you out, then that's also a thing too.
So you know, give our listeners just an idea of like, you walk into an audition, and I assume there's some choreographer teaching a step, or just kind of, you have to know your shit within 4 or 5 minutes, and then you're auditioning. Is that right? That's what I imagine. Maybe I'm just thinking it's like Fame, you know, like in my mind, but you know,
like,
what?
I wouldn't put it past people at certain points, but actually, I feel like it really all depends. Every audition is different. Everybody runs their auditions differently. I really appreciate the people that are very organized at their auditions, so you're not wasting, you know, your own time, but then you're not wasting mine.
Right.
As well. So,
like, give me an example of
so
both.
So it's really nice to go into an audition. Say there's like a closed audition, which means it's not going to be a cattle call. Not everybody's going to hear about it. Something a little more private. Say there's 100 people that are there. It would be really nice if they know what they want, the opposite side of the table. If they know what they want, they know what they're looking for, they can typecast, which means...
Like, when you say that, you're talking boy, girl, ethnicity,
well, typecasting could be, we'll say 100 people, we split them up, boys and girls, we need a certain height.
Okay.
So we pull up a person that's that height, and then everybody else who's either below or higher than that height, they get dismissed.
So is that because like they're choreographing something for an artist that may be short?
It very well could be that. Okay. It could be something that has to do with the set. Maybe the set's a little smaller, the set's a little taller, and they need long bodies or they need short bodies.
Okay.
So it really all depends. And then, you know, once they can typecast you, then that brings their selection down. Nobody's time is wasted. Then they're going to go, okay, let's start this choreography. And then they'll put the choreography on you.
You mean, so people walk in and then they'll just be like, yeah, you're good. We're going to see
you.
Yeah,
they'll say line up. Everybody line up.
That's ridiculous to me.
And then, yo.
Because, like, why can't they just send that in the email?
Nikki, let me tell you something. Let me tell you about one of my type castings. So I got asked to come to a casting for Anaconda, Nicki Minaj's Anaconda.
Right.
And Casper Smart was the choreographer. And Casper and I are cool now. We were cool. Actually, I don't know if we knew each other then, but. He told us all it was just females, and he's lined up all the girls as soon as he walked in the room. We're all chilling, getting ready to, you know, warm up, ready to hit these steps. He said, everybody stand up. And we all stood up, and then he was like, everybody turn around. And then he typecasted us off of the size of our asses.
What?
Or butts, sorry. I don't know if I can say that.
You can say asses. You can say butts, too.
Okay.
You can say butts and asses.
Asses and butts.
That's crazy. Why? Because in comparison to Nicki Minaj?
Anaconda. My anaconda don't.
Right. Right. That's
they
crazy.
They need that big old booty.
That's weird, though. That's a weird thing to kind of target.
I know it is, but that's the industry that we live in.
Right.
That's the world we
But don't
live
you
in.
Think it's silly? I mean, like, there's so many things
like
that.
It's silly
hear.
Because, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. If I was on the opposite side of that, I wouldn't necessarily typecast girls for not having, like, a certain size ass. I definitely want to see what they had.
Right.
Their personality, the way they move.
But see, that's everything to me.
What this is.
When I watch like a dance audition, it's like you see the people that ooze passion for
Listen,
it.
Listen, Nikki, I'm not telling you, that I'm proud of that. I'm saying I was a part of it.
No, I get it. No, but it's funny that you like, for me, it's like a different type of that. Singers go through that, musicians go through that.
But I will say on the record, I have never done that at any of my, like, any auditions that I'm out running.
So let me ask you this. When you're running an audition, what do you look for, or do you do the same thing as far as like height, or it doesn't matter?
No, honestly, I like to watch people move. I love to watch them move. Everybody moves so different, especially nowadays. Well, we pray for that and we reach for that, but I really don't like wasting anyone's time, and I don't like my time wasted. And I think that's like one of the biggest, that's one of the biggest things that I have when running an audition is no time wasted. So I'll give everybody an ample of opportunity to learn, and I won't make the choreography very long because anybody can find out what they need in a couple of accounts. It's not that.
Yeah, but there's got to be situations where you see a dancer that's good, but maybe they're not picking up the steps, for example. So do you, is there a curve?
That's totally fine. They're just not a professional, and I won't be able to work with them maybe if that job requires a limited amount of time
to learn the steps.
Before the show itself. Exactly. Exactly. Wow. Yeah, and okay. If I had more time and I like the way that they move and I like their style and I'm like, okay, well, she can, then yeah, I can work with that.
So on your bio, you said you worked with Nicki Minaj. Was it Anaconda that you worked with Nicki Minaj?
No.
Something else?
I did, so she did after the Pink Print tour, she did a couple of spot dates, and that's what I got brought into. She went to Africa when I got brought in. And it was really interesting. She was never there until the last minute. And I remember one of my very first moment with her. I was working with Lorianne Gibson. I still work with Lorianne, but at the time I was assisting Lorianne for Nicki. And I was helping with the choreography. And Nicki comes in, and Lori introduced me to her, and we shake hands. And I believe my hair was down, and like a little half up, half down hair, but it was down. And I shook her hand, and she was really sweet, and everything was great. And she popped up on her little stage, and then we ran through the show, and everything's great. Next day, come in, I wore a hat, and so my hair was pulled back, and I had a hat over. And she comes in and doesn't say anything to anyone and just pops on the stage. And then she's like, let's play the music. And I'm standing in the front next to the mirror, just leaning against the mirror. And she just like looks at me, looks my direction, and is like, who are you? And I'm like,
oh shit.
I don't know what she's talking about. She's not looking at her. She's like, yeah, you. And I was like, oh, me? I'm Megan. I'm choreography assistant, this thing, Lorianne. And she was like, oh. Lorianne's like, oh, Nyx, it's fine. That's Megan. She's choreographing. And she was like, oh. Okay, so I met you? I was like, yes, ma'am, you met me. She goes, oh, okay. Because I didn't know if I met you. And I was going to ask you to leave. I was
like,
oh, okay. Moving on.
Wow. And for no reason, just because she was probably...
I mean, to be fair, I was a different look than I was the day before.
Yeah, but that kind of shit bugs the fuck out of me.
Look,
when artists,
I'm not going to hate on anybody because there are times where I'm like, oh, I've met some people and they're like, I know we've met twice. And I'm like, dang, I'm really, really sorry.
Yeah, but you know what? It's like the way I think about it, it's like artists are that beacon of... kind of bringing people together.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like kind of broadening everybody's imaginations to see what is possible. And when an artist like takes for granted that responsibility, it bothers me. Because
well, not
that's
all artists are real artists.
Yes, I agree. So
boom, boom.
When you ended up working with her, was she cool after that or was she always just hard ass?
She was cool after that.
Okay. And you worked with P. Diddy. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, I love Puff. Puff gave me my black card.
Wow.
Straight up.
That's pretty tight.
Yep. He sure did. I was the only white female working on the Bad Boy Family Reunion tour.
Wow.
And it was really interesting. I definitely understood race and racism a lot more than I ever did before.
How so? It's a good question. This is a good question. I can already tell.
Well, to be honest, it's just the world that we live in. Being an older, more seasoned, especially an amazing artist, all of the ones that are signed, Little Kim, Faith Evans, even Total, Lox, 112, Mace, Puff, like all of them. They come from a certain background and culture. And I clearly am not that. I come from Dallas, Texas, from the way down dirty south.
Right.
And to be a part of this legendary and iconic tour with outstanding artists, undeniably crazy and talented artists for years, than them trying to take orders from me.
Right.
Got a little hazy.
Right. Because you see, like, the power struggles. We'll call them power struggles because that's really essentially what it all is.
Power struggles.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't understand because, you know, I love my job and I love working with everybody. And I don't ever see color and I don't see size. I see you as a person and I see how you are and I see how you act and I see what you do for others and how you give back to your community.
Yeah.
And that's what I see in people, period. And I forget that not everybody sees the same thing.
Right. Well, it's like everybody, I think geography plays some role in it. I think childhood plays some role in it. I think
how you're raised
plays a lot of it. 100%. I think also the circles that you're in when you're growing up, because a lot of the circles, I mean, I was in a very eclectic circles that kind of broadened my horizons musically or socially. So it was like a very wide range of acceptance. But a lot of people came from smaller pools, you know, smaller cities, smaller ghettos, smaller, you know, whatever it was. So you see, like, how geography plays into whatever it is. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter if you're white, brown, black, purple, yellow. Everybody kind of, that's how I see it too. But it also depends, like, where you are in the world or how you grew up in those circles and how those circles are influencing you. Because I've met people of all colors that were racist against all colors. And it's like, yo, none of that stands with me. You know what I mean? Because you see, you were raised right the same way. It's like, you don't see it as color. You see it as, are you a good person? Are you good to others? Like, I'll judge. I think I judge people more on their driving than I do on their race.
And let me chime in on that. I call those people, I am very much drivist. I'm not racist.
I am. Yeah.
I'm not sexist.
Me too.
But I'm drivist.
I'm definitely a drivist.
100%. When I get mad at people for not knowing how to drive and for making ignorant decisions.
I'm a New York taxi driver in LA, stuck in LA.
Oh, Nikki, don't get me talking about drivers out here right now.
Let me ask you this. Let's switch gears. Who are some of your biggest influences as far as dance? Ooh, good question. I can see you're spinning it in your mind.
As far as, like,
any genre, creators, choreographers, dancers.
I love Alvin Ailey. I studied Alvin Ailey in college, and what he did to the community in New York and what he's done is amazing. His technique is phenomenal, and it will work you out.
Yeah.
Very well.
That was mostly ballet, though, right?
No, it's modern, really. Modern ballet. But, yeah, the technique itself and what he stands for is incredible and brilliant, and his genius mind is pretty dope. Let's see. Who else? You know, Lorian Gibson inspires me. I have to speak on her. She inspires me with her creative genius self, too. She's a little cuckoo, con leche, so she says. But she helped, she built Lady Gaga, and she built Nicki Minaj, and she built Katy Perry.
Wow.
And that was pretty dope. To be around her and to learn from her and to see what she does, how she does it, why she does it.
Attention to detail.
It's a lot of attention to detail. And it really enhanced my thought process, and it really made me think way more outside the box than I thought that I already did. And it also made me feel good about it. Like, I felt safe. I feel like when people like to reach outside the box, it's scary. But I like to go against that fear. And then there's a whole nother lane of imagination that you can just dive into. It's pretty intense.
Where do you think dance is going right now? What do you see are some of the flaws in how it's run currently? Because having gone through the game, not the dance game, but the music game, I totally see the flaws of how it's run.
It's really, I don't know, I don't want to, you can call them flaws, but I think one of the biggest things that we struggle with right now are the teaching game and the studio game. Studios aren't what they used to be anymore. They used to be such a safe ground for individuals to go and be expressive however they would like and whichever way they would like. And to learn about fundamentals and foundation and build on that. And I feel, unfortunately, that we, our community now praises itself on social media followings and
right.
being exposed on YouTube and yeah. Instagram. And
which I think is very silly. But maybe I'm just old. I'm just that old guy. It's like, why is this?
I think in the back of most people's minds, it's silly because a lot of us weren't raised that way.
Right.
And so it's hard for us, or I don't want to say hard for us, but we just battle going back and forth with it, really, at the end of the day. And unfortunately, we have to get on that train because the train's going.
Right.
And we don't want to miss it. But there's also ways to navigate how we're able to use it in a much better way, as opposed to portraying ourselves as social or as public figures or social figures, and you are showing your whole naked self that I don't need to be seeing. You know?
Yeah.
So it's just how we, what am I trying to say? How we put it out, I guess.
What do you think of, like, but, you know, when you see, like, street performers, like, your trains?
I love street performers. They're so raw.
Yeah.
I love
that. I feel
that.
The same.
They're so raw. They're not, it's not tainted by, which is, you know, some people say that about acting, too. Some people say that about acting, that for people that don't really take a lot of acting classes, it's nice to see them book acting roles. Just because they don't have habits, like they don't
right.
have bad habits
right.
that have already been caught on. They're just their natural raw self, and it's really nice to see that. Not saying that, you know, y'all shouldn't go and take acting classes if you want to be an actor, because you absolutely should. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying in certain cases, some cases, not all, that it's nice to just have that pure raw talent, and it's nice to watch.
Well, it's funny. It's like I'm obsessed with tap dancing. I think it's such a great art form.
Oh, tap dancing is incredible.
But, like, I went to New Orleans, and it's like you see these kids, they're crushing soda cans and, like, sticking them under their tennis shoes, and they're tapping their asses off.
Same thing with the drumsticks in the bucket.
Yeah, and it's like then when you see that, you're like, wow, there's just, like, this innate talent. It's like somebody get these kids some tap shoes, but it doesn't, like, there's something that they learn in a different kind of playground when it comes to that, and it makes them better as a result. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I always wonder,
they're
like,
not tainted.
Yeah.
You know, they do what they do for the art. They love what they do for the art. Right?
Have you ever hired a street performer? See, good question. Oh. Good question. No, the only reason I ask is,
not saying that I wouldn't, though, because
right.
a lot of street performers are street kids or b-boys
right.
that I do hire.
Right.
I've hired multiple b-boys from multiple productions, and they started most of their stuff on the streets. Like, that's how they learn. That's how some of these kids even, like, get into dance, and then they start going and taking classes, which is why class is so important, and having the right classes and
right.
the fundamentals and the foundations, because there are kids out there, there are students out there that really want to learn and that get misguided by, they just get misguided.
Tell me about some of the experience you had working with Cirque. You worked with Cirque du Soleil on some stuff.
Oh, yeah, I did. The sister companies. Toured a couple times with them. It was really interesting. Every day was a great day. Every day was a beautiful day. Like, I was really inspired. I wanted to learn Chinese poles. I wanted to learn contortion. I
wow.
wanted to learn lira. And then, I mean, since we're out there, and everyone's so nice, but they're also all from all over the world, like Russia, New Zealand, Wales, and
a lot of them were, like, Olympic athletes,
mm-hmm.
or, like,
mm-hmm.
they were in dance troops.
It's impressive.
Right.
So we have like the time. They have the time to, and they're super nice. So they teach you. So I tried to venture out on some Chinese poles. That, by the way, Nikki, is very hard.
The Chinese poles?
It's very hard.
Tell me why.
It's like, so if you have this flag and they hold, I'm at the pole, and they hold both hands on the pole, and then their whole body like planks right. out, like out.
Right. To the whole they side. Make it look easy.
They make it look so easy. Yeah. It's called a flag.
Right.
Yikes. I have yet to accomplish that.
So there was that. What were you doing? Were you doing dance? Or were you doing?
I did
more
tumbling,
gymnastics?
Okay. Tumbling, and then I was also a dancer. But
how long did you do that for?
Total, probably a year and a half.
Yeah, usually I hear it's like 3 years is like the max most people do the tours, just because of injuries.
Yeah.
Just because it's so hard on the body. How many shows were you doing a week?
Like five shows a week, I think we did.
All around the world?
Five to eight shows a week. Some That's days crazy. We do two, some days we'd only do one.
And now you're embarking on a new part of your career. Tell us a little bit about this. Like, are you starting a management company? Is that what I said?
No, I'm starting a creative direction artist development company. And it's called New Entertainment. And that's what it houses. Creative direction, art and artist development, choreography. And soon when I have an actual home for it, it will house some of the things, which I don't know if I want to expose right now.
All right. That's okay. That's all right. And do you think, like, your expertise as a performer kind of lent itself to wanting to do something a little bit different, changing gears?
So, basically, basically what we're talking about, what's missing in our world and what I can help bring into the community and into the industry. And it's me, among others. And I feel like about my generation of people is were the last ones that understood the value of tradition and understand the value of the fundamentals and the process and
right.
what it takes to get somewhere. It's not you're going to be handed something one day and then boom, that's it, you've made it.
Right,
ba-ba-bam,
right.
Welcome, you've arrived.
Crazy? Yeah, it doesn't work like that.
No, shoot.
But you know what? That is an illusion. I mean, there's no question about it. When I work with young artists, it's like there is that illusion. They're like, well, once I get this one thing done, then it's all downhill. I'm like, well, it doesn't really work like that. You have to love the process of whatever you're creating. And if you fall in love with that, then everything else is gravy. Because it's like,
yeah, and
it will take you. Yeah, it takes time. It's a slow burn. The slow burn is the best.
It's so worth it at the end.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm just really excited about. I'm excited for what's to come. And I'm excited for what I'm able to offer. And that makes me happy and it makes me smile.
So let me ask you, as a dancer, when you're either creating something or performing, what makes you the happiest? Choreographing a routine and seeing
it—that's really hard, Nikki.
Or is
because
it
I
performing?
I'm always going to be a performer at heart,
right?
No matter what, I'm always going to be a dancer at heart. There's always going to be a giant part of me that wants to get up and do everything, but I also truly love creating. I didn't before. I struggled with that for a while, actually. And when I found out what it meant to me to create something and what it did for me was when it clicked and I started using it to what that was. And
explain that.
It's something, I don't know, I can't really explain it, honestly. It's just, it's a light bulb that went on, really, so to speak.
For me, it was like, you know, performing was, it's always going to be like this, the root of who I am.
But, 100%.
But writing for other artists, for me, also made me appreciate somebody else taking something and running with it and watching that grow. And then it also, like, fostered me wanting to keep performing as well as keep writing for other people. You know what I mean? So,
but are you talking about just choreography in itself, or are you talking about for artists?
I'm saying for both. Yeah, either way. Like, when you see, like, maybe a dance troupe, or even if it's a solo performer, doing something that you came up with, is that what gives you the rush? Or is it like performing?
Absolutely. No, well, it's both. It's the same thing at the end of the day, really.
Right.
But it comes hand in hand. Watching that is exactly for the person that is doing it, they're going to do it the way that it's made to be done and the way it's supposed to be done. The feeling that you get when you get it, that's what they're going to show you. And that itself, because my moves are not just steps. I don't really believe in just making steps. It's a feeling more than anything. Any step has a purpose. It has a reason why you're making that step, why you're doing that next moment, why are you going this direction instead of this direction. But it all makes sense because it ties into a story, into an experience. And for you to sit back and enjoy an experience and to watch a story from start to finish that you've created is just as great as being up there doing it yourself.
So what's the one thing you want to give young artists as far as guidance into this world of dance, even listeners that are listening? If somebody wanted to become a dancer, what's the one thing you would tell them?
I mean, I don't want to sound cliche at all, but the number one thing is just you can't ever give up. If it's something that you really, really want, there's always going to be ways. There's always going to be obstacles. There's always going to be battles in anything that you do, in anything that anyone does in this life. We all have that. We all have those haters, those people that want to knock you down. They want to see you in the ground. They want to see you on the dirt. And what they don't want is to see you get out of that dirt, brush that shit off, and stand up and keep it pushing and not even worry. Don't even be fazed about what they have said or done to you. And that's another thing. In this industry, it's so cutthroat, and people are so brutal, and they can it's nothing for anyone to come over and just like swipe the legs right out from under you. It's right. Nothing for them. It really isn't.
And they don't think
so
about it.
It's so disappointing nowadays, and right. So disheartening.
Right.
But that's the competitive world that we're in. And so my advice is, when those things happen, because they will happen, is to literally just know who you are and know why you're in this. Know why you're doing it. I know who I am. I'm Megan Nugent. I'm built for greatness. I'm built to make some change. I'm built to press on. I'm built to help the younger generation under me. I'm built to guide. I know what I'm built for. What are you built for? And that's something that I pride myself in very, very much. And that's why it's taken me the time that it's taken me to get where I am, because I stuck to the process and nothing was handed to me overnight.
Love that. High five for that. You should run for Congress.
That's what these are.
Well, it brings me to something like, I saw this play about Sammy Davis Jr. and Nat King Cole. And Sammy Davis Jr. said, it's one thing just to be able to walk through the door, but I want to be the type of artist that walks through the door and lets others in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like,
that's beautiful.
Isn't that amazing? And
that's
it's like, when you hear something like that, it's like, yeah, those are the artists that I embody as like, models or inspiration for what I want to be, what I want to do. And I think there needs to be more people like you. This is why I'm interviewing you. This is exactly why, because that's what it's about. It's the truth. So let me ask you this. That competitive factor that you're talking about, do you think it makes us better, or do you think it's harming the industry?
I think it's how you use it, because being a competitor is a weapon in your arsenal. And I really do believe it's how you use it. I don't use it to harm others. I use it to enhance others and enhance myself. I don't use it to step on others and to belittle others. I use it to learn new paths and pave better ways and better directions and give better advice in the competitive world. And I think being a competitor, that's something, they say, oh, that's bad misconduct in football.
Right.
It's such a competitive sport, but that's what happens all the time, and it's up to people like myself and like many others. I don't know who at this point. There's so many people that really are a part of affecting change, and yeah.
I think as a layman, I have to ask this question, but do you watch The World of Dance? You're like, no, what is that?
Please forgive me, audience listeners. It's not that I don't like it.
No, it's an interesting question, because I don't watch American Idol for the same reasons.
Honestly, I don't watch, unfortunately, like I'll glance at them, or if I know people that are on them, I'll 100% give them my support. But majority, more times than not, these shows are really all about politics, and it's really not about the art, and it's not about how great you are. It's a look that they need, and that's, you know, that's just my, that's my opinion, and y'all can take it and throw it right back or whatever you want to do with it. But that's how I feel.
Where can people find you if they want you to dance for them, choreograph for them, guide them?
So my Instagram is Megan, M-E-A-G-A-N Nugent, N-U-G-E-N-T 1. And there you will find my website, you find my email, however you want to contact me. All information is in there. And John Moore at John Moore Events is my PR marketing
speller, because it's an interesting, interesting.
John Moore, J-O-N-M-O-O-R-E, events.com is my PR and marketing extraordinaire. Yeah, I had to just repeat myself.
That's all right. Sorry. That's how you got to do it. Well, you know what? You've been a wonderful guest.
Oh my goodness, time is up.
Time is up. This is the, that's what I like about interviews. That's when you know you got that. You know, I'm saying this on the air, but that's when you know the interview's strong.
Yeah,
because that's how it is for
me
too.
I hope so, audience. I hope so, family.
I could literally ask you like 10 hours more of questions. Just
and I wouldn't even oblige by giving you all those answers.
Real quick, I'm surprised you didn't say Michael Jackson was an influence. Most dancers would say Michael Jackson.
Well, you didn't ask me about artists.
Okay, artists. Let's ask you. Let's round this out. Artists.
Okay. Well, dancers. Michael Jackson, Prince, Whitney Houston. The Jackson 5. Look at them go.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Old rock. I love old rock. Because that's where it's raw.
Yeah.
Old rock.
Well, and also like James, you see like James Brown. When you see a dancer that does, like,
I love James Brown.
It's amazing when you see somebody that's innovating and it's like street, but it's also doing something for, it's like pushing things forward. That's what I love when artists do that. You know, I was lucky to see Prince. I was lucky to see James Brown live.
You know, and that is something that I really, unfortunately, I do regret in life. And I don't have many regrets. But Prince and Michael Jackson are two regrets. Because they were so close to me. I could lick them.
Yeah.
And yet, I never even got to go to a show or got to meet them. And
I met Prince.
Fortunately.
I met Prince, but I never met Michael Jackson. But it killed me not to ever see him live. Yeah.
You know, some people don't even know who they are. And by people, I mean kids.
I know.
Parents, please educate your children.
Well, it's crazy that they'll know like a Bruno Mars or a Taylor Swift, but they won't know Michael Jackson or Prince or the Beatles.
Educate everybody, people. That's right. Let's educate Foundation. Each other.
Foundation is everything.
100%.
Last question. Where do you think the world of dance is going?
Is this a question about the television show?
No, I mean the world of dance, like the real world of dance. Where do you think it's heading?
That's a really good question. I believe that it could head in multiple directions. It really is based on the people that can influence change for the better at the end of the day. And if we can influence change for the better, then I think that we can be an amazing outlet for the world and an expressive one and a more free-soaring and free-spirited one. And that's, dance is such a beautiful form of art that we say so much without saying anything.
Love it. Don't forget world peace.
And world peace.
Well, Megan, it's been a pleasure
interviewing
you. You're going to have to come back in about 10 months and let us know what's going on with your company.
Absolutely.
And all that stuff. But look for Megan Nugent's either dancing for you, choreographing a routine that you probably are seeing on TV.
Developing
you as an artist, etc., etc. And on behalf of my co-host Eddie Pence and myself, we'll see you guys
Thanks,
here next
Thanks
week.
Again.